Welcome to the Relationship as Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Shelby Lee. Outdoor adventure enthusiast, dog mom to Luna, world traveler, longtime meditator, espresso lover, and a trained somatic psychotherapist, trauma specialist, and certified coach. Talking about trauma doesn't have to be so daunting. From a connected place, we can navigate anything together. Looking forward to exploring with you today. Here we go. Welcome back, Natalia. Really excited to have you here.
So happy to be here again.
Yay. So if y'all didn't get a chance to see or hear Natalia and I share way back in 2022, that has been one of the most listened to episodes, and it was just so lovely getting to know you in that way. Natalia Sanyal is in Vancouver, BC, and focuses with business owners on marketing, branding, copywriting, and lots of it in a trauma-informed way. And so we're going to have a conversation today about those things and how we can focus on our audiences and ourselves in the process of marketing and branding. Tell us a little bit more about yourself. That was just what I know about you. What else would you like us to know?
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much summed it up well. I would add that the people that I work with are very empathetic people. They tend to be change makers. Some of them don't see themselves that way, but they are very passionate about being part of either systems change or change in at an individual level. And, you know, there's an argument that can be made for every business that is what they're doing. But the people that I work with tend to be like coaches and therapists, DEI consultants, and they care a lot about the impact in, you know, their marketing as well as just their everyday interactions in their work. So that's what I would say about the people that I serve in particular. And they are very much my people. I can relate to them a lot. So when it comes to like the trauma-informed lens that I try to apply at like every level of my work, it's such a pleasure to work with people who value that for themselves and for the people that they work with, because I don't think it is the standard in the business world to think about that stuff. So, yeah.
No, it sure is not. So I'm so glad that you're doing that work.
Thank you.
Yeah. Remind me, I know you probably answered this question last time. I imagine you'd answer it different this time, but what inspires you or inspired you to start doing this work?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I have been in marketing for a long time, and I spend a lot of time, you know, doing marketing as a freelancer or employee at corporations and agencies. And I didn't think I had a choice, and I didn't at the time. You know, I wasn't able to call the shots on campaigns and certain types of words that we could use and could not use. I would try my best to make suggestions when I saw that maybe this wasn't the greatest approach to a campaign or the use of a word that could be harmful. And for the most part, that was brushed aside. And everything changed in 2020. And I owe it all to Black Lives Matter, because that was the turning point in my experience as a marketer, working with larger companies and agencies. That's when those companies started paying attention to the impact that was being had, because people on social media were very vocal and they were calling out the brands, and there were lawsuits, and brand reputations were being damaged. There were PR crises like all over the place. Stocks were being affected. So they were paying attention, and they were very aware of if they didn't pay attention to it, the impact it would have on their bottom line. So As much as it was like, you know, a little bit frustrating that that is the reason why they suddenly cared.
Ugh, yeah.
I was like, okay, great. This is the opportunity that I have been waiting for. I didn't think it was ever going to come. I was just like, you know what? This is marketing. Marketing is sleazy. It's not going to be my life work. I'm just doing this because I'm good at it. I love the creativity. I enjoy the strategy. And I didn't like the manipulation and all the sleaze that came along with it, but I needed to pay the bills. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this in the meantime until I figure out like what my thing is, because I hadn't figured it out yet. And at that point, I wasn't really proud of being a marketer. It's not something that I would willingly talk about because of that part that didn't align with my values. But when the BLM thing happened and the impact it had on my work, I was like, yes, okay, this has changed things for me. And now I feel like that was the missing piece in marketing, where once I could fill that part, I was happy to be a marketer. And so that was the spark. That was the turning point. Everything changed after that. That was the inspiration for me. It was a 180. Everything just kind of switched overnight, and it was great for me.
Wow. I love that story. You told a little bit of it last time, but it's become a bit more full and rich. So it's really fun to see how it's evolved.
Yeah. I'm really grateful for that moment. And I remember, I don't think I told this part the other time. I remember thinking, oh, maybe I should just specialize in this, like, publicly, and not take any client who is not down with anti-oppressive marketing.
Yes.
And I felt really risky because anti-oppressive marketing wasn't a thing. It was just, you know, marketing. Everybody knew that marketing was sleazy and they just kind of accepted it. But then I decided to test it out and like go on LinkedIn. And I remember being in a canoe with two of my really good friends on the weekend saying like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if like I put it on my banner, like decolonize your copy. And we all laughed about that idea. And we're like, ha, I wish I could do that. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to freaking do it. Let's see what happens. And I was most afraid of my marketing peers, to be honest.
I bet. Yeah.
I was just scared of being called out by them, and that they would feel like I was making them look bad. And then, you know, not getting any business because nobody knew what the heck anti-oppressive marketing is, and questioning if it's actually effective. So that's the background story.
I love it. Could you tell us how you describe or define anti-oppressive marketing? And then also, is there a way to have marketing not be sleazy?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes, there is. Anti-oppressive marketing has three layers to it. There is the layer that I think probably most of both of our audiences would think about is the impact it has on our audience, followers, prospects, customers. Are we causing them any harm in our marketing? Then there's the lens of what about us, like the marketer and the business owner? The impact that it's having on us as the marketer. And I can talk about that a lot, especially with what's happened in the last few months with Gaza, and the impact that I saw it have on a lot of business owners. So there's that lens as well. And then there is the, like, is it actually good for my business? We still need to make those decisions based on, like, you know, revenue generating activities. So I look at all three, and anti-oppressive marketing considers all three of those impacts, three of those worlds. And the sweet spot is in the middle, where it is good for our audience, it is good for business, and it is good for ourselves.
Wow. That sounds almost unreal.
Like, I know. It does. To be true. It totally sounds too good to be true. And I know that that is what people will think when they hear it for the first time. And it's not like straightforward. There are so many nuances to consider on every level, on all three. So it's not like I'm going to give you, you know, a framework and it'll work for everybody throughout the year all the time. It's very like bend and flex. There's a lot of like questions that we need to be asking and checking in, you know? So that's it in a nutshell. That's what antidepressive marketing is. That's how it is.
And you were saying that before, you did not feel proud to be a marketer. Yeah. How about now?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. I'm so proud. I am very happy. I feel, I'm just really grateful that I took the leap. And like I said, grateful for that movement that started this journey for me. And yes, I'm, this feels like my life's work.
Whoa, what a change.
I know. I did not see it coming at all. So yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I'm just imagining, you know, the coaches and therapists and other care providers, DEI experts that you support, having a paradigm where they could feel proud of their marketing. Or like myself, I'm like, I wish I could be in my business in a way where I'm like, I am so proud of how our business markets, you know, that it's so rare to hear that and how cool it is to dream into that.
Yes. Oh, I love the dreaming. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
One thing that has been really alive for me lately is reframing marketing to think of it as, like, most people will think of marketing as a business activity. And it becomes one of the things we dread doing. And even marketers will have trouble marketing themselves. Like, it's very common that a marketer does not market themselves. You know, it kind of feels like a drag to have to write another post or another email. And this is a recent realization that I have, that's come to kind of like the forefront of my mind, but it has been the way that I've approached marketing myself since the beginning. And that is using marketing as a playground for self-expression, a lab to experiment with concepts and wording and offers and copy, as well as like a channel for self-discovery for those reasons. It's a practice. Like, marketing is a practice. And I think most of us think of it as a, like, an end goal instead of it being a practice. It's kind of like fitness. Fitness often is framed around, like, I want to lose 10 pounds in 30 days. And that journey can feel very different from, I'm going to join a neighborhood volleyball league and we're going to play 2 times a week there. And then the movement happens like as a result of that, but that's not the primary focus. It's just going there to socialize, to move, to play, instead of like thinking of it as having to lose weight and weighing yourself every day. And it's just a totally different approach, you know?
Totally. It sounds like the difference between survival driven and what would you call that? Like focusing more on like thriving or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lightness to it. It's not so, it's not so heavy. It doesn't feel like the stakes are so high. And I think with marketing ourselves, a lot of the times people shy away from it because they want to get the strategy right. They don't want to just, you know, throw spaghetti at the wall. They think that that is, they would rather not do it at all. And that's because they want everything to be like completely perfect so that they get the results that they want. Instead of treating it as a, like, you know what, I'm going to post today and I'm going to post a, like, you, I don't, maybe you have seen it, maybe you haven't, but I do things that are seemingly ridiculous on LinkedIn, like dancing, drumming on boxes, cardboard boxes, you know, rapping, because it's fun. I'm not doing it to get a client, but that is a big part of how I, in fact, whenever I'm stuck, because I get into marketing ruts all the time, that'll be my go-to. I know that I like need to step away from the strategy and just post a post where I'm like coming alive. And that will look different for everybody. And we don't let ourselves do that.
I love that, especially for LinkedIn. It's so,
I know.
Yeah, I mean, you have so much engagement on LinkedIn, and it's because it stands out, right? It's not another one of those structured strategy posts.
Yeah, exactly. Something else that I actually just posted recently that seemed to resonate with people was this idea of speed posts versus power posts.
Hmm.
That idea came from boxing class because I went to boxing and we were doing speed tracks where it was like just, you know, do it as fast as possible. And then power tracks where it was all about like winding up and then punching really hard. And I thought about how like we think we need every post to be a power post. There's a lot of energy that goes behind a power post. A lot of thought, strategy, overthinking and perfectionism comes out with power posts. And we need to do more, like we need to put some speed posts in the mix where it's just a, it's just an easy, easy bunch of words or message that like, we don't even need to edit really. It's just showing up and playing. So that's another tactic that you can use if you're feeling like you are, like marketing is too heavy.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I was noticing I actually started feeling lighter when you were talking about all three of those.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to talking about like specifically how we can make trauma-informed practice in marketing for our audience and ourselves. And I just wanted to share a little bit about, you can't just make something trauma-informed when at its root, it is corrupted. And I've been really sitting deeply with like, how might Natalia do this? You know, like how would a trauma-informed or anti-oppressive, somebody that actually gives a shit about people instead of alarming their nervous systems into buying and manipulating their feelings so they're in a state of shame, thinking they can't do it without them. Like, what would an entirely new system be? Because I was like, I couldn't use one thing from this entire program. Like, I tried for a week, I put it up, and I felt like shit the entire week. I felt embarrassed. I was like, oh God, I hope nobody that knows me actually watches this. Like, just as an experiment.
Yeah.
And there was no part of it that felt good. Like the way I used the testimonials, the way I did the countdown timer, the way I sequenced the emails, the way I even tried my best to deliver a webinar about not burning out, but I burnt myself out in the freaking process.
Oh.
It was so manipulative and bad. And every part of me was like, no, 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 no.
Yeah.
But I'd spent 10 grand all said and done. And I was trying desperately to not, trying to get something out of it. But my biggest teaching was, we cannot just put trauma-informed XYZ on top of a broken system. And I was just wondering if you resonate with that, if you could speak towards that.
Yeah. Ooh, okay. I have a few thoughts on it. There are some tools that are neutral. And then there are some tools that, like, no matter how you use it, it's going to cause harm. So an example of testimonials, let's take testimonials. I'm not sure the advice that you got with using testimonials, but, you know, testimonials are very powerful. Marketers call it social proof. So it signals to anyone who's considering buying that, like, okay, this is going to be a good decision, because clearly it's not biased, because as we're selling it, obviously we think it's the most amazing thing, but we need to hear from other people who've actually used it. So testimonials are very powerful that way. The way that some people use it, where it gets to be manipulative and sleazy, is using testimonials from like the one-off example of someone in a large group who did amazingly well. And that was really just a one-off. You know what I mean? It's not the average result.
Mm-hmm.
So if we use that testimonial and we don't let people know that that is the case, it's very misleading, because then you set the expectations that like, oh, everybody who joins this is going to get results just like that.
And yes, that is exactly what was happening in this course. But I didn't do that.
Right.
What didn't feel good to me about that was that he had us frame these beautiful testimonials in terms of like case studies of like, these people weren't doing great. They were doing so bad. You know, they didn't like themselves. And then like, with my support, they, you know, X, Y, Z. Mm-hmm. I was like, no, these people were already wonderful, amazing, incredible, capable humans.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like taking all the credit for
exactly.
Their testimonials. Yeah. I see your point. I think the way that I work that scenario is I give the context. So
yeah, context.
Context really makes a difference. So when I'm sharing a case study, I let people know that like, hey, so-and-so got these results and they had an existing following of like 100,000 people, by the way. So if you have like 5K or even like 1,000 people, it's going to be different. So just FYI, they had an existing 100,000 people in their following.
I love that. Context. You
know? Yeah, the context. I think the context matters. And then even just like throwing in the props for the person. Not taking all the credit, but like giving them props. Yeah, it's like such a simple thing, but it does make a difference in that people understand that it is not all on you, the facilitator, to, you know, change their lives completely, because that is really never the case. It's just impossible.
It's a collaboration.
It's a collaboration. And that's a really tricky place for the business owner to be in as well.
Yeah.
Like, you're setting yourself up for like a really sticky situation if you have set expectations to be this like magic wand for everyone, because that's not going to be the case for the majority of your people.
Yeah. What I came to is I was like, okay, if this sales sleazy outdated system is a broken foundation that I'm not willing to participate in or build my foundation upon, what might it look like? And I was like, you know what? I love to inspire people to buy or sign up or however you want to put it. I'd love to help them feel safe enough inside themselves and with me to sign up for my thing. I don't want to scare people into it. I don't want them to feel less than. I don't want them to feel like I have the magic wand and they have nothing, or that everything they've done up to this point is bullshit and now that they need more. I would love to find a system where there's inspiration, there's agency, there's,
yes,
something's totally different.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Agency is a big one. And I think that like, that's where the asking questions come in, right? Like, have I set up my audience to have agency in their buying decision? And that means, have I given them enough time to consider, to check their balance and their budget? You know, we're encouraged to do things like limited time offers, or promotions that pop up like 24 hours. You've got 24 hours to make a decision to buy something that's $2,500, you know, and that's not very considerate. And that's where marketers will use urgency
mm-hmm.
to manipulate, because urgency is so effective in getting people to do things. So yeah, agency means giving them enough time, giving them all the information they need to make the decision, allowing them to reach out and ask a question. A lot of sales pages don't give that option to people to ask a question that is not covered in the FAQ.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So giving them that option. What else is there? Yeah, I would say that pretty much covers it. It's a very broad category, like agency, but if you keep that in mind when you are writing your messages for a promotion, it'll help a lot to just like apply the agency filter. Have they got enough information and enough time to make this decision?
Yeah.
And the higher your price point, the more context and the more information you have to provide. So longer sales pages and more opportunities to interact with you and ask those questions. Another thing that you said, oh, inspiring. Yeah. You want to inspire instead of scare them into
back.
So relatable. And we are taught to do, I think we kind of touched on this in our last conversation, but we're taught to like paint this picture of doomsday. If they don't buy, what's going to happen to them?
Yuck.
Big yuck. Huge scare tactic. So I don't suggest using that. Instead of that, like externalizing the problem. So a lot of times in marketing, we tend to do the shaming thing where we shame our prospects and make them feel bad about the decisions they've made that have gotten them to this point, like no matter what the topic is. So instead of shaming, letting them know that like, hey, you may have spent this amount of money in the past on things that didn't work out. And the reason is probably because we are conditioned to make those choices. So blaming systems instead of the human.
Yes. Oh, I love that.
Because it really is the conditioning and the systems that have so much to do with the decisions that we have made that haven't worked out in the past.
I was told you're not a real entrepreneur if you're not willing to throw down this amount of money and add, and that, and it hit my part of like, well, I want to belong. Like, I want to seem smart. I want to seem successful because I am. And I have, you know, and I was like, so I leave this call then being like, I'm not a real entrepreneur, you know, like that shame piece. If I say no.
Yes, I have been there. We've all seen it. It's happened to us as like the consumers. That kind of messaging, again, so freaking effective, which is unfortunate that it works so well. But people are catching on.
Mm-hmm.
They're catching on now. And studies are showing that like consumers are more suspicious than ever of companies, obviously like big time with corporations. But also just marketers in general have a bad reputation. Business coaches, things like that. And we are the ones leading the charge. We're the ones like teaching other businesses to do the same thing. So yeah, I hear you on that. The shaming is not a great approach and we don't have to do that. Instead of that, what really resonates with people is empathy.
Yeah.
And letting them know like, hey, it's not your fault. It's the conditioning, it's the systems. And here's what you can do about it. Yeah. You know, so that's where like painting a vision of what like a systems change would look like. And so I try to do that in my sales page without over promising. So that's where it gets tricky, right? With the inspiration part, like we can go down that path and paint this beautiful picture. And then we can go into this territory of promising them way too much, things that are like unlikely to happen. So we have to be careful of overpromising as well. And I would just call it out. Like I like to teach my people in my program to do an anti-guarantee because there are things that we just can't guarantee. Like I can't guarantee that you're going to make $10,000 after this program. And I'm just going to put it up there and say it. Mm-hmm. And it feels very counterintuitive to be like, hey, I know that like really what you want is to make money, but I cannot promise you that. So
yeah, I think I just took a deep breath. I think people are actually relieved and they take the pressure off themselves too and can show up more fully when they're not expected to do these big transformations. I find that, you know, in supporting newer coaches and therapists, they think in every session they have to deliver so much and have this big transformation and be the magic wand. And I'm like, do you know actually how much pressure you're putting on your coaches and clients to actually have to do so much in each session? Wouldn't it be such a relief if it was just enough to sit with you and they felt like they were more than enough to show up with you? And that's how I want marketing to feel, is like everything doesn't have to be epic, you know?
Yes. Yeah, totally.
We are more than enough as we are. We don't have to over deliver and over promise and over give. Yes. In fact, it stresses out our clients.
It does. Okay, confession. The whole like over delivering, you know, they say under promise, over deliver. I freaking hate that idea so much as someone who is a chronic over deliverer. Yeah, I've had to really like be conscious of my tendency to do that with people. And I think the person who really made me aware of it was a client. And she was so wonderful because she just was like, hey, you know what? I paid you for this thing. You've already done this and you don't need to do all of that. Like, please, like she's very trauma informed. And she basically was like, stop it. Stop over delivering. She stopped me from doing more for her. And I'm so grateful for that because I was like, oh, it's so helpful to hear that from a client.
Yeah. She was probably feeling anxious, being burdening you or something.
Right. There might be like, you know, some guilt for like from the client's end when you over deliver as well. But yes, I am so guilty of over delivering and I hear it constantly from clients like, oh, wow, you don't have to do that. That's like way more than I expected. And it's not a badge of honor.
No. So the message is just to be clear about what you are offering and letting people choose if that feels like something that would be supportive for them.
Yeah, exactly. Letting people choose. Yes. That's where the agency comes in. Absolutely.
Yeah. We're talking about this a little bit right now, but you know, bringing trauma-informed practices into marketing in terms of ourselves. Mm-hmm. How do we support ourselves in a trauma-informed way when we're business owners who are marketing?
There's so many things. I'm trying to like pick one right now. One of my favorites, because this is a trend on social media in particular, we see a lot of people sharing very vulnerably on social. And my suggestion is to share things that are scars, not wounds. I'm all for vulnerability and being transparent, but when you are sharing a wound, you are opening yourself up for some really unwanted experiences. Yeah. And it's not necessary to do that at all in marketing, even though everybody seems to be doing it now. That is a simple framework to use and just check in with your body and see like, how would I feel if some potential responses were negative? And if it's like a, ooh, I mean, your body will tell you, you'll probably feel it somewhere. If you get any sort of sensation that feels uncomfortable, don't share it. But yeah, I'm all for sharing something, you know, looking back at a situation which has some sort of value, whether it's for me or for my audience to share it, if it's a scar and not a wound. So that's one thing. Another one that has come up in a really big way since last October was when the genocide in Gaza kind of took over the media. Everybody became aware of it. And there was a lot of frantic activity and non-activity in marketing from business owners. People did not know what to do. There was those, you know, typical trauma responses in marketing where it was flight, fight, freeze happening. So in marketing, that would look like fighting would be like online bullying. We saw a lot of that happening. Yeah. People just taking people down. And then there was the freeze where they were just scared. And it was like they stopped posting, stopped engaging, but not intentionally. There was panic that was also happening behind the scenes, and they felt like I should be posting, I need to post about my business, and I should be posting about Palestine, and I don't know what's appropriate, so I'm just not going to, and I feel like I'm going to be judged for that. So lots of those thoughts were happening, and then there's fawning, which I just learned is not a trauma response. It is a trauma like stress management strategy, which I didn't know. But the fawning happens where it's like performative activism and just posting the thing that you think you should be posting.
Your That
hair.
makes sense that that would fit under fawning.
Yeah. And then the flight is like a fear of getting it wrong, which was so heightened. And it still is. And I think that I was actually in the middle of a launch when October 7th happened. And it was such a tricky decision because I know my audience pretty well. I have a lot of relationships where I just feel like I know how they're going to respond to certain crises. And I was observing them just on like their activity and non-activity on the various channels and reading their posts. And I was like, oh, they're not okay. Of course, makes sense. But when I was thinking about my launch, I was like, I actually need to pause launch. And that was a privilege that I had, because not everybody can just like put business on pause. But I had to put it on pause and then pivot and do a workshop that was addressing those stress responses with marketing in particular and how it applied to that.
I'm so glad you did that. People probably really needed that.
Yeah, I was having my own responses to the whole thing. And wondering like, okay, at the same time, this was my only launch for the year. The whole year I had only one launch planned, and I was like, oh, okay, how am I going to do this? And there was a lot of faith that went into the decision. And I decided to do that workshop. And then after that, like everybody was so understanding and relieved. Like they were really happy that I paused the launch. People had already bought. So they were expecting the program to start at a certain date. And I had to email each person and be like, hey, I know that this was supposed to start then and you've already purchased and I will absolutely refund you. But I think we just need to pause it. We're going to start in the new year. And there was only one person that did not want to follow that. I gave them the refund, and then paused everything, did the workshop, and then resumed my activity. And a lot of questions that I was getting was like, is it okay to sell right now with all the stuff happening? Like, it feels so, like, my business feels trivial. It feels like a very privileged thing to do. It feels insensitive and all of those things. And I absolutely understand all of that. And also, marketing is not the only channel for activism and support, like at all. It didn't even exist a couple of years ago. And people were still protesting and being activists in whatever form was natural for them. I don't think everybody is a protester. I think there are different ways of showing up. And if people just focused on like what was most natural for them and where they were able to contribute the most, oftentimes it's not marketing.
And I'd also challenge those people that their businesses are insignificant. It's like, well, you're helping people. And right now we need people helping people. And
Yes.
it's okay. It's not like sales are bad. You
Yes.
know? It's, I think we really need to reframe that so
Yeah.
that people don't feel like they need to compromise their own livelihoods. They can take care of their families.
100%.
Whenever there's something happening in the media that needs attention and in the world that needs attention, that doesn't mean that we have to compromise our own livelihood.
100%. Yes, I fully believe that, and not everybody does believe that. So, and I think that is a debate that I won't engage in because I don't think we're going to change each other's minds. But I, at the time when I did the workshop, that was one of my messages that I said, like, hey, you need to market your business. So please do that, especially because my audience is a group of people who are doing such important work. We need it now more than ever. I was nervous to say all of that, and I didn't release a recording to the public because of that. I was like, you know what? I don't really want this circulating. So it is going to be live only. Whoever shows up, great. And then, yeah, I don't want my words to be taken out of context. So yes, there was definitely like stuff going on for me as well, where I needed to protect myself.
Yeah.
You know, there's the threats of doxing that was happening to people, probably still is. For sure it still is. You know, where their physical location is being released online.
Wow.
So that they can be harassed. And so there are very real consequences and risks that we need to be aware of. And I think it really helps to do a risk assessment, because when we see these things happening to people, we can kind of apply that scenario to ourselves, where it might not even be that likely that it would happen. So I had a lot of conversations where I was encouraging people to do a risk assessment. If they didn't feel safe marketing online, can you name the specific risk? And get clear on like what that is, and then weigh that against the potential reward of showing up and marketing yourself right now, and seeing if you have the tools to support you in minimizing and managing that risk if you want to do it.
I feel like we could do a whole podcast on that. So many folks I work with are so scared of getting bullied.
Yes.
And it really keeps them from sharing yeah. about their work for a good reason.
I know. Absolutely, for valid reasons.
Yeah.
Yep. I am faced with that as well with my audience very often. Mm-hmm. It's tough. And I don't always have the answers. I'm never going to push someone to do it anyway. You know? Yeah. So yeah, very nuanced.
Well, I'm aware of time. And I'm wondering if there's one or two bullet points, like takeaways, that you'd like to give to folks, either for their audience, you know, when they're focusing on their audience in a trauma-informed and anti-oppressive way, or themselves. Anything that comes to mind, and if nothing does, that's okay too.
I want to give something that's like not complicated to apply. And I would say, how can you make marketing feel playful for you? What could that look like? And maybe that's a journal prompt that you can reflect on. So think about that, how you can use marketing as a channel of self-expression and like a playground. And then the other takeaway, as far as like how to minimize harm, think about the agency piece, which we've talked about already, as well as accessibility. And I think accessibility is very accessible because it's becoming more and more common now. And so, you know, add captions to your videos, add the image descriptions to your photos that you use. Wherever possible, try and include an audio version, a text version, and just think about making your content accessible. And I think that that is something that is fairly straightforward, whereas like agency is a lot more nuanced. So I would say start there.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. How can people find you, and what will they find when they get there?
Okay. So I would say go to my LinkedIn, because I'm pretty active there. I guess you will just drop the link for them.
Yes. It'll be in the show notes.
Okay. Awesome. So yeah, that's where I hang out. You could sign up for my newsletter when you get there. There's a link that you can find on my LinkedIn profile to my newsletter. And that's where I will be seen doing ridiculous things, like occasionally rapping or dancing or whatever expression comes to mind. But I also talk about decolonizing marketing and anti-oppressive marketing in general. So hopefully you find that content helpful. And I've got a new offer that I'm brewing up, and I'm being very conscious of not making it like epic, but I'm very excited about it. So stay tuned for that.
I can't wait to see it. I love that. I actually love like the anti-guarantee and like the anti-epic. It's great.
Yeah, totally. I like that. Anti-epic.
Well, it's always such a joy to get to connect with you. Thank you so much for giving of your time and your wisdom. And I look forward to next time.
Thank you for always keeping it real.
Thank you so much for listening. I have really special news to share. I've planned a deeply nourishing and luxurious retreat for us in Panama in May of next year. It's called Soulful, a somatic embodiment retreat for healing and wellness providers. If you're here listening, it's for you. I created this retreat out of my own burnout, wanting everyone to get the opportunity to return to their own deepest heart with nervous system regulation work, surfing, gentle yoga, and so much more. Come realign with your soul's compass. Expand your capacity to meet life with more ease and sink into really sweet support. Spots are already filling up. Find the link in the show notes or at shelby-lee.com.